Welcome to this special Dialogue on Disability edition of Musicians of Rochester. I'm Julia Figueres. Double bassist Galen McCormick chatted with me a year ago about the many changes in her life brought on by Meniere's disease, her loss of hearing, and her departure from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. But as Marilyn Monroe once said, sometimes good things fall apart so better things can fall together. And many better things have come Galen's way in the last 12 months. Galen joins me today to talk about it. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Julia.
It's so nice to have you. Okay, so very brief recap of the road up to where you are now.
Sure. I was with the Rochester Philharmonic since 1995, and in about right after my graduate school degree, which is about 2004, 2005, I started getting very dizzy and losing my hearing, and that took about 5 years for my left ear to go deaf. And then, unfortunately, Meniere's disease presented in my right ear, and so that took another almost 5 years for that to take most of the hearing. So recently, the end of 2016, had a big medical event that wound up making me fully deaf for quite a few months. And it really became clear that it was time for me to switch careers and figure out what I could do at that point.
So an update on your hearing now.
Well, so in some ways my hearing is better and in some ways my hearing is worse. My right ear has continued to get worse. My left ear, I was able to have a cochlear implant back in the summer. I was implanted in May, and it was turned on in June. So I'm actually sitting here in the studio hearing you completely fine because I have this beautiful device now.
That's amazing. And what is a cochlear implant? Can you do a brief explanation of
you
what
bet.
This means?
The layman's introduction to a cochlear implant.
Exactly. Cochlear implant 101.
Okay, so inside my head now, this is where it gets real scientific, there's a long filament, tiny, tiny filament that goes down into the cochlea, which looks like a snail inside your head. And that is where all the little hairs hear all the music that you play on XXI. And so they've put this filament in, and it's got electrodes that stimulate different parts. Then way up above my ear and behind it, but under my skin, there's a processor with a magnet. Outside my skin, there's another processor that sticks on with a magnet outside and leads down to a battery pack and microphones behind my ear. So all of this works together. This great computer works together to take in the sound, make it digital, and then fire away those electrodes inside my cochlea.
It sounds like that would be odd for traveling. Do you have to have a letter when you go through the scanner?
Oh, you know, I never really thought about it. I do have a card that says I have a cochlear implant, but it doesn't set anything off at the airport.
Oh.
I know, right?
And you have great hair, so nobody sees a thing.
Do you know, I'm only wearing it down because it's cold today. I wear it up all the time, and it's, you seen it? It's blue.
Oh, great. It's screaming blue.
I got blue because I wanted, when I wear it up, I wanted people to see it, and I wanted people to ask me about it. I'm not ashamed of having it, and I think it's pretty amazing that I have this computer in my head.
Are you going to have your other ear done? Or no?
Possibly. It does look like the trajectory for that ear is probably going to keep going down, but it's just unknown if that's going to be quick or so. I may, but at the moment, having a tiny bit of acoustic hearing is really helpful because I can tell that you're a woman talking to me versus telling if there's a man talking to me, because the sound I hear through the implant is pretty robotic still. Like, I just get highs and middles. I don't get a lot of low frequency. So if I take my hearing aid out, everybody kind of sounds the same.
Is that going to change?
It probably will change a bit, but I don't, because of where I retained my last hearing before I went deaf, that's where they pitched all of the sound that comes in. Like, they tweak it the way you guys can tweak your sound, I think. So I have a lot of high and middle because that's what I perceive the best. So there was no point in them trying to spread it out like normal. I just won't perceive it. But it's different for every person that gets a cochlear implant. Like, you work with your audiologist to get it meshed to what your brain perceives.
You talk about you're proud of this, and you have the screaming blue piece of equipment on your head. And it's like the most obvious way of embracing your disability, as it were, embracing this thing to say, look, I'm here, I'm walking, I'm standing, and I have this thing too.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you don't have to do it that way. My audiologist said to me the day I qualified, I had an exam where I was profoundly deaf. And he said, okay, yes, you can get this. Don't worry, we can match your hair, which, your listeners can't see that I have purple hair sometimes. But I know that's what he didn't mean. So I said, I really want fuchsia, like a brushed metallic fuchsia, something really great. And he could look, the blood ran out of his face. He's like, I'm like, do you have colors? And this is the only color they have for this particular company I went with. I said, well, that's what I want. There's no reason to be ashamed of it. And yes, you're right. It's my way of both embracing it. And I also feel really strongly about destigmatizing hearing loss for other musicians in particular.
There was an article that you just posted on Facebook from the New York Times mm-hmm. about the perceived stigma of hearing aids. It's quite clear to me that in no short time, I'm probably going to have to get some sort of a hearing device as well. But there really is this this stigma that, you're just an old girl now. You're just an old guy. You got to have that. Is it because we all want to be perfect?
Oh boy, I don't know. Is it because we embrace the youth culture? I really don't know. But my best guess is, because this I've gotten a lot, you're too young to be deaf. You're too young to need hearing aids. And I think that's just an association, like you said, of this, like hearing aids is for someone who's old, like someone who needs a cane must be for someone who's old. And yet I have friends in their 30s with mobility issues who need a cane, or they need a pushwalker because they have, let's say, cerebral palsy or something. And so I think, I guess that's where people are with that. But it's easy to hide hearing loss for a long time. And we talked about that when I was here, like how long I hid it from my colleagues in the RPO. But it was really to my detriment, socially and professionally, to hide that from other people.
The last time you were here, you said that this was your superpower. And your superpower has actually jettisoned you into a lot of really cool new projects over the last 12 months. For one thing, you're the executive director of the Canandaigua Lake Music Festival. So what's that all about?
What a wonderful offer I got from them. A few years ago, when they had a change of leadership there, they came to me, and I was still playing with the RPO, and I was still doing a lot of freelance work and a lot of teaching. And I said, I just feel like I'm too overwhelmed to take on a new project because I'm very type A. I'm not going to give up a project to take on a project. So they called me again this summer, and I was at an orchestra management training workshop at USC out in Los Angeles. And the timing was just perfect. I thought, I know these musicians, I know this area. And I had taken that class in LA because I wanted to see if I would move into the nonprofit sector, like in social justice, or would it be in disability advocacy, or could I actually stay in the performing arts, not as a performing artist, or would it be too painful for me to stay in that? I was starting to feel like that's probably what it's going to be. So I thought, then we'll just jump into the deep end of the pool, take this orchestra management class, and I'll know at the end of this. And at the end of it, I was more passionate than ever about staying in the field because I did have all of this background from being on stage and all of these connections to musicians and an aptitude for learning. I just love being in school, and I love the steep learning curve. So, sorry, long way of saying, they called me in the summer while I was at that class. So my classmates were like, wow, look at you. You got an executive director job while you're in the class.
That's a very successful class, I think.
Actually, yeah. Another one of my classmates just got picked up as the CEO of the Billings Symphony in Montana. So just 4 months after we ended the class. So I'm very proud of him.
Well, yeah, let me know how to get in touch with this class. It sounds,
absolutely.
I'd give him a call.
Absolutely. It's fantastic.
Go run a group. So now what are you going to do for the Canandaigua Lake Music Festival? What will your tasks be as the executive director?
So shop of one there. So I do have two artistic directors, Kevin Kumar and Amy Sue Barston. They are amazing, but they don't live here. So I'm their boots on the ground to look for new venues, to handle the contracts, to do the budget, do the fundraising. My goodness, that's a learning curve right there. But we have amazing people here in Rochester that I've been friends with forever who have been willing to tutor me and give me some advice. So I'm learning as I go about all these different facets of management. It's been terrific.
Are you going to talk to to Amy Sue and Kumar, Kevin Kumar, is it?
Yeah, Kevin Kumar.
Are you going to talk to them about the direction of the festival, or is that all on them? And
it's a blend. As my first year, I really want to leave it to them to take the artistic direction, but I'm happy that we can speak that language, that they don't need to try and break it down for me. If they say, we want to focus on this type of music or we want to focus on these types of guest artists. No problem. Like, I understand all of that. We are going to have our 15th anniversary year this summer, so it's a big celebration for us. And I had some ideas, but I sort of kept them back until we had our first artistic meeting. And I was delighted that, what they want to do is what I wanted to do, too. So, yay.
That made that conversation easier.
It really did. Yes, it really did. So, I mean, the sneak peek is it's about celebrating the culture of the Finger Lakes, the winemaking culture, the beautiful area, and getting out and showcasing all the fabulous people who work and develop the Canandaigua area and Canandaigua Lakes. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Now, on top of all of that, you're also in this initiative at the Eastman School of Music, Arts, and Medicine. What is this?
We actually have a working title now. So we're the Eastman Performing Arts Medicine, and I'm the program manager for that. This is another thing that I feel so lucky. It sort of fell into my lap, but I knew everyone in the leadership team. I just didn't know this project was happening officially. So this project is to bring the Eastman School of Music and the University of Rochester Medical Center to have those two big institutions collaborate. So for instance, we'll be having specialized healthcare for musicians the way that they already have sports injury, which is going to be fabulous. You know, if someone in Garth Fagan is injured, if their foot, their whatever, their Achilles tendon, and they have to perform, they've got a way to be seen immediately. You know, if we have a violinist who thinks they're coming into carpal tunnel, I think one of the biggest problems I've seen with musicians is that they wait too long to be seen, or they just simply can't get in because the doctor's schedule is so full. So this is a concierge priority service for musicians. And we'll be bringing music into the hospital, so there'll be more music in public spaces. We already have some music therapy there, but we'll be advancing the music therapy program. And there's a research component around how does music affect healing? How does music affect our bodies and our minds? So it's a really broad program they're bringing forward, and I'm just thrilled, you know, that they asked me to help them.
I think it's a really important thing to do, too, because one of the things is I think that musicians don't go to get these things fixed because it means they won't be playing. There's a very good chance, I mean, and I'm speaking as the mother of an oboist / English horn player and such problems with carpal tunnel mm-hmm. with those two instruments. And it's like, I know I won't be playing if I go to see a doctor because they're going to tell me to stop, so they don't. And it becomes disastrous.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think that there are teachers who don't know how to handle that either.
I agree with that, but I feel like I've got a lot of buy-in at the Eastman School around physical health, mental health, spiritual health. There's been a big push towards mindfulness across the university, actually. So when I found all that out this summer when they approached me about this job, it was a complete yes because I saw all of that moving in the same direction. However, you're right, and I see that in a lot of teachers in different schools, that it's sort of old school, suck it up, keep going. But you and I both know if you keep playing through that pain, you're going to stop for a lot longer.
Possibly permanently.
Exactly.
Galen McCormick is our guest today as we have this special dialogue on disability edition of Musicians of Rochester. You were studying American Sign Language. Are you still?
Oh, no, not as much. It's funny, when I got the implant, it sort of ceased to be that important to me. But I really do want to get back to it. Can I tell a short story?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I've been volunteering for about a year now at the Wilmot Cancer Center as a musician in the lobby, doing the kind of work that I'm going to be actually bringing in Eastman faculty and students to do. And a couple months ago, there was a patient who came and sat down near me, and he had his little cough mask on. And I still read lips a lot. You know, I'm getting better and weaning myself off that. But anyway, I thought, oh, not going to be able to. It was clear he wanted to talk to me, and I'm not going to be able to lip read him. But he signed to me, "You deaf?" Because he saw my implant. So I signed back, "Yeah, you deaf too?" And so we were able to have this simple, very simple conversation because I told him right away in sign language, my sign is not that good. But oh my gosh, I thought I really need to keep doing this because there's just this whole way of communication. It's fascinating. So I always tell people I sign like a 5-year-old, I bet, but I get by.
And you've been running.
Yes.
Is this a new thing or a return to an old thing?
I don't know. I was never much of a runner. But, you know, when I got sick 2 years ago, I had so much vertigo that I couldn't really, like, run or walk. I certainly couldn't bike. That's what I really like to do. My husband would have to come out with me because I'd have a vertigo attack during an evening walk, and I'd have to kind of shuffle home with him. So it's just, I'm finally feeling well enough to kind of take everything back into my own hands and say, okay, I can do this. And I'm really thoroughly enjoying it.
It feels to me like you've really, the sun came out since I've talked to you 12 months ago, that you've just had this burst, this huge starburst over your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of it, you know, speaking to you was really helpful, just knowing that, okay, the story's out there. I don't have to pretend anymore that I'm something I'm not. And there's nothing wrong with who I am. I think that was the biggest thing about doing that. And then so many people came forward to me and said, I'm so grateful for your story. Can I tell you mine? And that was amazing and empowering. Just letting other people know that, like, you are also fine, exactly the way you are. You know, thank you for sharing that. And watching them develop and bloom, too, has been great.
What have you learned through all of this? Have you learned new things in the last 12 months about yourself?
I'm sure I have. I think I'm more patient with myself than I used to be. I know I was very, very type A. I'm still very type A, but with a big dash of patience now. I don't know. I was thinking the other day, the one thing I wish is that I'd given up the charade earlier. I don't know what would be different, of course, but I wish I had just admitted to my hearing loss earlier and maybe just seen what happened, because I feel like I wasn't giving other people enough credit, you know, by keeping that all to myself.
You weren't giving yourself enough credit either.
True. Very true.
And now you have. And now you're a big executive director and some, like, you know, person with this big initiative at the Eastman School of Music. And it's a very different place than you were a year ago, and a very different place than from where you were 2 years ago.
That's a very good point. You know, I had started to do some work at the Eastman School in the community school doing some summer programs, and that was my little covert, I know I'm going to need to change my job, like, plan to start to get some administrative experience. But it's true that this is a complete change where I play very little. I still teach a little bit. But it's like the whole schedule has been flipped, where it's so much more administrative. And I was so concerned about, oh my gosh, I have to talk to all these people I don't know. I'm not going to remember their names. They're going to think my hair is funny. I became like my own fifth grade daughter, you know? I have to go to a new school kind of feeling. And then I was surprised at how much I loved it, how much I love talking to people I don't know. I love talking about music, music and medicine, the Chamber Music Festival. Like, I had no idea that was in me.
And yet there it is. And when you were here last, you were talking about the little things that you've composed, like Hot Dog. And these have just come out, are about to be published, or they're being published?
Well, I'm self-publishing them while I shop them to a publisher right now. I've got two publishers considering it. But we just presented on them at the New York State School Music Association. And I was so grateful to have my collaborator there. Katra Jikanowicz is amazing, up in your school district, I believe. And she's just wonderful. I was so grateful to work with her, and I was grateful to be able to show this to all these teachers, because it's really meant for that kind of work in the schools.
And here you are, a new person. See where you are a year from now. I mean, think about where you've come in 12 months. Where can you go in another 12, Galen?
That's a really good question. Don't you sometimes feel like, I can do anything? And then you realize there's only 24 hours in the day, right? So at some point soon, I'm going to need to, I think, start to pick and choose my saying yes to everything, you know, saying yes to committee work and volunteer work. But I don't know. What I would really love to see is, of course, always more classical music embraced by more people in the community. That's really important to me, that it's not an elitist thing. It's not a thing for just for old people. It's not, you know, pigeonholed. Is that the word I'm looking for? But I'm not exactly sure where that's going to go. I'm just really grateful that I'm able to be here in Rochester and keep giving to my community. And I don't know, I just feel really, really lucky.
Well, we're grateful you said yes to this interview. So thank you for coming by, Galen. Our guest is Galen McCormick. We will be exploring the works of other performers and composers who have overcome challenges to create music that we love throughout the week on WXXI as part of our station-wide initiative, Dialogue on Disability. You can get more information at classical915.org. This podcast is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.